Blog Talk Radio.
I lift up the jeweled breast. I lift up the amber lips. I lift up the shadowed eyes. I lift up
Welcome, Gaias and fans of Voices of the Sacred Feminine. I hope you're able to start to enjoy that feel of the changing seasons as we inch our way closer to spring, the feeling of new potential and creativity. Are your juices beginning to flow yet? And speaking of spring and ways to tap into that essence, if you aren't on my email list, you might not have heard. So let me take this opportunity to be sure you know about the free downloadable meditations for spring I have on my website, which you can access at no charge and there are no strings attached. You can use the meditation to the Isis Temple, the journey there, lots of fun, or there's one on Ostara. Or the third meditation that helps you embody the empowering aspects of the lion-headed Egyptian goddess Sekhmet, who so many women are connecting with as an archetype of female power, tenacity, and strength, and passion, too. So if you want to find these, just go to my website, KarenTate.com. Once you're there, click on the button to the left on the home page that takes you to the Goddess Store. Then scroll down the page till you see them. It's really easy. And I thank those of you who have already found these meditations and used them because you've been writing to me, and it makes me feel good you're enjoying them. So please feel free to share them with your friends. That's what they're there for. It's my gift to you. The Goddess inspired me, so I am in turn sharing with you. I hope you can stay tuned in with us for the entire show. At the top of the hour tonight, I'll introduce you to author Leslene de la Madre, and our topic of discussion will be raising daughters in patriarchy. Not an easy feat, I'm sure. We're going to touch on how to keep the lineage from mother to daughter intact in the process, and in the process, raise bright new voices for Goddess. We'll be getting into cultivating an inner standing before becoming a parent, understanding how girls are socialized in our culture, and learning the difference between guiding and controlling. And I hope we'll also have time to get to Leslene's interpretation of the Demeter Persephone myth, along with role modeling being a powerful woman. Then at the bottom of the hour, did you hear that? At the bottom of the hour, it's our What's the Buzz segment, where I discuss what's been going on out there in the world that has those darn bees buzzing around in my bonnet. Sometimes it's those insidious isms or the toxic nature of intolerance or inequality. It's about what's happening to girls and women in patriarchy. It's things you should be aware of as a goddess advocate. And then to close the show, we'll have our usual new announcements and our closing prayer or words of inspiration. So I hope you can stay tuned for the entire show. And we still have a few weeks left celebrating March as Women's History Month, so let's continue to make this a time to really reclaim the contributions women have made to society, going back to the earliest of times and ancient civilizations up to contemporary times today. You know, knowledge is power, and there are those who would rather what we talk about, what we study, what we share would remain hidden and swept under the rug. Hey, but like I said last week, that's not my nature. If you tell me that door has to stay closed, that's just going to make me all the more determined to find a way to either tiptoe in or bulldoze through and pry it open to learn what's on the other side. I guess that's my Sekhmet tenacity shining through. You know, after working with the great She for all these years, I've given her a new name to add to her list of names, Lady of Tenacity Manifested, and I'm talking about Sekhmet. I guess you could say that's become my mantra for life, Lady of Tenacity Manifested. Well, I want to be sure to show my gratitude to the artists who generously let me use their music for my show. Tonight's opening was by a group called Zingaya, and the cut was Veil of Inanna, and I just really liked their sound. And I don't know, maybe it speaks to my ancestral DNA or something like that, but I don't know, I really enjoy it, and I hope you do too. And we have some new artists coming on board in the coming weeks, so I'm sure you'll enjoy just as well. Well, it's almost time to get to tonight's guest, Leslene De La Madre, so I'll tell you more about her in a minute, but just real quickly, let me give you a sneak peek into what the topics are going to be tonight on What's the Buzz. Someone just sent me moments before I logged on tonight, an article about the New Jersey Board of Education voting this morning on adding pagan and Wiccan holidays to the state's school calendar. So I want you to know about that. I'll tell you about the article in Archaeology Magazine about the dynasty of priestesses that's been uncovered on the island of Crete in Greece. In a really upbeat article about what makes the healthiest and happiest societies. And no, it is not wealth. So stay tuned in and find out what other things make people most happy. And I'm wondering if you've heard about the new apostolic Reformation, or the NAR. They call themselves prayer warriors, who are organizing spiritual warfare to take over America. That was kind of scary. I want to just make sure you're aware of that. And you've probably heard about the latest sex scandal rocking the Vatican. Well, one cardinal says celibacy is partly to blame and it should be reexamined. So, you know, that might be something we'll briefly touch on. So please stay tuned in after I interview tonight's guest for our What's the Buzz segment. And remember, listeners, you can call in and talk to my guest and myself. That number is 718-766-4662. So without further delay, let me turn my attention to this week's guest, Leslene, and let me tell you a bit about her. She's an author, an elder, a ritualist, a teacher of women's spirituality and feminist shamanism, and is a soul midwife to both the living and dying. She has a great book out, too. I'm sure we'll mention that. She's taught nationally and internationally and has created retreats for women's empowerment based on soul retrieval of the sacred feminine. She's recently been a part of the Elders Council at Earth Dance in California, along with Grandmother Agnes Pilgrim, who's been on the show. She's the chairwoman of the 13th Indigenous Grandmothers. And Agnes has said about Leslene's work that she has an important message, and many people need to hear it. Well, Leslene, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Karen.
It's good to have you back. It's been a while since I've spoken to you.
Yes, it has, and it's really nice to be back.
So when you were on the show before, you were talking to us about the book you wrote about, why don't you tell listeners the title and just briefly describe what the theme was?
Yes, it's Midwifing Death, Returning to the Arms of the Ancient Mother, and it really is about the soul midwifery work tending to the dying from a perspective of sort of womanist-oriented values and views about the cycle of life and how death, dispelling the fear of death, is really important in creating a peaceful death.
And so Leslene, what is a soul midwife? That's a new term for me. I mean, I know midwife. I used to be a Catholic, so I know about the soul. Is this about helping you cross over, or?
Well, it's in the regard that I just spoke about it, yes. The word therapy or therapist comes from therapé, which means one who tends to the needs of the soul. And so a soul midwife, as I see it and practice it, is just being there for people in their life passages and in healing that they may be pursuing for themselves, making offerings to that from my perspective, and just really holding people holistically in their sacred journey of life as they unfold and heal.
So, because I know we're going to go on to the other subject, so maybe
sure.
Just mention the title of that book one more time.
Yeah, thank you. It's Midwifing Death, Returning to the Arms of the Ancient Mother.
And I see you have a website here, midwifingdeaths.com.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Yep.
Well, you know, as we were waiting for the show to start, we sort of touched on the subject that today was St. Patrick's Day, and you said you're not wearing green, but you're surrounded by green, huh?
Yeah, I'm sitting in a green chair.
Well, you know, I think it's worth mentioning for some of our listeners out there who might not know, you know, goddess advocates, feminists, you know, those of us who know this stuff, believe this stuff, walk our talk in this kind of stuff. Well, we've sort of reclaimed St. Patrick's Day for ourselves.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, sure. You know, we were told that St. Patrick is known for driving the snakes out of Ireland. And it's my understanding that there really were no snakes to drive out in Ireland. And so it's become, that's really more of a metaphor for driving out or repressing the wisdom of the wise women. Some people would say witches, which
mm-hmm.
means wise woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the snake is just a very, very old symbol of the power of Shakti or woman.
Well, when you think about the caduceus, you know, the snake
yeah.
is on the caduceus, and,
yeah.
You know, the snake, the serpent has for a long time always been a symbol of the goddess.
Right.
So, it wasn't really snakes he was driving out. Other people have described it as well of, you know, Christianity driving out paganism, patriarchy,
right.
You know, replacing the idea of matriarchal ideals.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's all of those things.
I think it is all of those things, and I think it's really important to have this conversation that we're having and just make that correction, because when we live by mythologies that you know are really based on lies, it does not create a healthy culture.
No, it doesn't. You're so absolutely right, Lesleen. I mean, I'm teaching the Cakes for the Queen of Heaven series,
yeah.
and
mm-hmm.
and you know, one of the first things they taught in the first class is when we are brought up on mythology that is about a male god and about male leadership, then we end up with a male dominated society.
Yes.
And so we've swept all of these women's myths, these goddess myths, these pre-Christian myths under the rug
mm-hmm.
and demonized them. So
yeah.
they've disappeared from our psyche. And look what we're
yeah.
left with. You know,
yeah.
who can say we're better off?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious we're not. And
right.
that it's really a very, very bad idea to try and erase women's mythology. It's very bad idea.
Well, and you know, speaking of reclaiming St. Patrick's Day for goddess advocates and
mm-hmm.
And you know, getting away from that Christian ideal, the Goddess Temple down in Orange County in Southern California has been at this for some time, as long as
yes.
they've been in existence. They actually have a big celebration there tonight, honoring the goddess, honoring the sacred serpent. The motif is the snake goddess from Crete.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you know, we're rewriting. Writing the myth so that you
well,
know our
yes.
daughters and their daughters don't have to live in such a male-dominated culture.
That just gives me goosebumps. You know, it really does, because it's proof that you know, patriarchy has tried to push her down and you know, hide her away, and it's absolutely true that she cannot be done away with. If you try and push her down, she'll pop up somewhere else. And that's just what we're seeing. So
absolutely. Well, you know, she popped up as Mary. She popped up as Mary Magdalene. She pops up as Guadalupe, you know. But, yeah, you're right. You know, and I've said that in my books, too. The people will not be without their mother.
No.
You know, it's just a primal need. You know, we need her. And and dare I say, we need her more than him.
It's true.
You know, at least the him we've grown up with, you know. Somehow, you know, I can wrap my mind around the idea of a Jesus-type God. Or some of the pagan gods, you know, but not with what's in our culture today, you know.
No. And Jesus, you know, as far as I'm concerned, was at least a feminist, if not a radical feminist. And you know, some people have thought that Jesus was a woman. So, you know, there's a whole lot that we don't know, and there's a lot that we are remembering. So.
Well, and you think about it, too. If these people who say they have found Jesus would really walk their talk the way we, you know, have been told Jesus lived and thought, and, you know, the world would be a better place.
Yes, well, it's true, and Jesus no doubt learned what he learned from his mother, so, you know.
At her knee. Well, you know, I've said his mother was probably one of the first, you know, leaders of social justice. You know, they were under the yoke of Rome's oppression, you know, so he probably learned at her knee.
Well, of course, and 13 indigenous grandmothers, when they made their trip to Dharamsala, India, to sit with the Dalai Lama, you know, he publicly said, and I'd never heard him say this before, is that the first teacher of compassion is the mother, and I've not ever heard him say that, because, you know, the little boys in Tibet were taken away from their mothers, so it was amazing for him to say that. And
well, have you also heard that he said it would be Western women who would save the world?
Yes, and he also said that he was a feminist.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Well, you know, this is a great segue into our topic tonight, raising daughters and patriarchy. And and I would imagine we probably ought to have someone come on and talk about raising sons and patriarchy, too. Let's start with the daughters, and you know, maybe one of you know, one of the foremothers will step up and talk to us about raising sons.
The sons,
But so tell me about that. First, you know, how many daughters do you have, and what is it we have to know?
Well, I have two daughters, you know, I take it all the way back to making a conscious decision to having children, especially at these times. You know, I for a long, long time was not going to have children, and I felt that I kept feeling these two spirits around me for a long time, and it was still my decision not to have children. And then I decided, okay, well, I guess I'm supposed to have these children.
Are you saying that the spirits you were feeling around you, you thought they wanted to, they were hanging around because they wanted to be born to you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and I thought that they were female, that they were daughters, and that we had some kind of something to accomplish together in the world. So I went ahead and had them.
Okay.
And I feel that I really feel home birth is extremely important. They were born at home. I lived on the farm in Tennessee at the time. And
was that dangerous, though? I mean, what if something went wrong?
Well, we were very prepared. We had our own doctors and an ambulance backup and paramedics and EMTs.
Okay.
So we were very prepared for that because we did live in the backwoods of Tennessee. But we were, our statistics at the time for birthing were way better than any hospital statistics.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. And so did you have a midwife?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I did. And so I think home birth is just really important. If you're going to have a child and that's a conscious choice,
mm-hmm.
that you do it at home.
Okay.
And so that's
I've heard about other women talk about, you know, more natural ways of giving birth than in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
First of all,
mm-hmm.
they're not laying flat. They're more at an angle, so gravity
right.
helps the baby come out. Or maybe
right.
they're even birthed into water. I mean, did you mm-hmm. do any of those sorts of things?
Well, I mean, I walked around. I sat up. I did whatever I felt I needed to do. And, Vicki Noble has written that giving birth is a peak shamanic experience for a woman, and because you bring forth the soul from one world into another. And, I also have to say I don't think you have to do that in order to have peak shamanic experiences, but childbirth... done in an empowered kind of a way can be a peak shamanic experience.
Okay.
So if it's that for the mother, then at the same time it's going to be very empowering for the baby that's coming into the world.
So you weren't trying to create I hope I'm using the right term here. You weren't trying to create a sort of a trance-like or ritual atmosphere. It's just the very act of it. The breathing and everything, I would imagine, is pretty trance-like. But I guess I can't imagine in that pain, though, being able to stay in a shamanic
mm-hmm.
state. But I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had any children. My cats are my children, and
uh-huh,
things
yeah.
like birth are books and movement.
Yeah, of course.
You know?
That's why I say you don't have to have a baby to have this kind of experience. But if you do, it's good to create it so it can be that way. And it is its own ritual if it's allowed to be what it is. I do actually write about on my website, I do have an article I wrote about birth as a shamanic experience. So if
okay.
anybody's interested, they can go there and read about that. But you learn how to transmute the pain, and you learn how to use your mind to change how you think in the moment about everything, but about pain in particular. So it's very, very empowering to learn how to feel pain as just very intense energy and not put a label on it as pain and, oh, pain hurts. It's intense. It's like surfing. It's like
mm-hmm.
riding waves.
Mm-hmm.
And, a woman's body was created to do that, and it's part of the blood mysteries that, if you're going to have give birth, it's you might as well be empowered.
Well, you know, and I'm thinking about how much women probably miss who have no connection
exactly.
to any of these ideas.
Exactly.
I mean, just I'm thinking of the women who wouldn't even know what you mean when you say the blood mysteries, you know?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
know, we have been stripped of so much of our femaleness. It's really...
It's true.
It's a sin.
Well, it is a sin. I agree with you. I've said it's one of the biggest crimes ever committed is all the stripping away of women and wisdom. But like I said, you can't do away with it. It's there. So
Yeah. So you were lucky enough to have this sort of support, and
yes.
so how close were your daughters in years?
3.5 years apart.
It was the second one easier, and that you had done it once before?
They were both very, very different. I wouldn't say easier. I would say I had a sense of what to expect, but then again, you never know.
Okay.
So,
all right. Well, let's sort of shift out of the birthing and start to get into the raising.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this idea of raising daughters in patriarchy. What are the
yes.
most important things you think we need to know?
Well, I think, first of all, the mother, she needs to be empowered within herself. And this is what I would call the development of her own inner standing. We say understanding a lot. This is inner standing, standing with herself in her inner wisdom and being wise enough to be able to guide another being and meet the needs of another being without getting, without being reactive and triggered and getting into power struggles and, in other words, having an understanding about her own triggeredness, her own woundedness, because a child is going to push every single button that you have. And that's kind of their job because they're our teachers. And so to have enough understanding or inner standing before bringing another being into the world, I think if women did that, we would have a different world because...
I'm starting to think this is another book, Leslie.
It is. I've been thinking about this for a long time.
Okay, good. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm sitting here thinking we could probably talk an hour about developing your inner standing.
Yeah.
But then we wouldn't get to the rest of this.
You're right. I think you're right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. I think you're absolutely right. And no, really, you are right because the developing inner standing is, in my life, has been a very profound journey into my own psyche and into my own awakening and into my own uncovering of who I really am as a sovereign being on the planet, and that's something that continues. It's just it's not done,
Mm-hmm.
But there's a certain maturity that comes. One hopes, as one ages. I mean, it's one of the reasons why, for instance, in the Cherokee tradition, Salagi, you're not an adult until you're 52.
Well, and I would think, too, as a mother, I mean, just using common sense here, as your daughters age,
mm-hmm.
They need you in different ways. So you're constantly challenged to be a mother. It's not like you can do the same thing when they're 30 as when they were 13.
You're absolutely right. That's absolutely true. I feel like I've been in a constant journey of metamorphosis of my own changing, and they really require that. Children require that of you if you're a present adult. If you are lost in your own woundedness and haven't healed, and this culture is very, very wounding. Patriarchy is very, you and I both know, is very, very wounding because when you strip away the wisdom of the feminine wisdom, the female wisdom from all of our experience, we're sort of, half developed or something.
Well, we're left with women thinking they have to be twiggy with male bodies walking down a runway and running to, cosmetic surgeons to meet some idea of beauty that patriarchy set for us. And that's all we are. It stops there.
Yes.
That's the beginning and ending of what women are. Excuse me. Unless we, that's all over, then we should just settle down and take care of our husbands.
Oh, my goodness. You are right. Yes.
Hyperbole, but I'm sure not too far from some women's lives,
many women's lives, I'm afraid.
Well, so we're sort of moving into this idea, I think, of how girls are socialized in our culture.
Yes.
Can you sort of explain what that means and give examples?
Well, I think you really sort of hit it on the head when you just said, that they've got to be twiggy or they've, got to go run for the plastic surgery. I mean, I think what's been given to girls as they grow are certainly images about, you in the deeper archetypal or archetype realm, perhaps it's either you're the virgin or the whore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can be Mary Magdalene or you can be Mother Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And say, let's say in a religious context, which you're more familiar with than I am, because I wasn't raised in a strong religious background. Or you can, or socially, you can be a tomboy, which is, you know, acceptable, sort of, you know, or you can be a Playboy bunny. You know, there's nothing that is about really empowering girls, let's say, through the wisdom of their moon time. And this is what I referred to earlier on as the blood mysteries. What the empowerment that comes with the first menarche or the first blood and women's bleeding is just enormous, that power. And that has been so shamed into the ground. You know, it's been called the curse. And when I think, if we call a women's bleeding time and a girl coming into that as getting the curse, then all life that is issued from that blood is cursed.
Mm-hmm. And we start to see our bodies not as a sacred vessel, not as this divine life-giving tool. The tool's not really a right word, but you know what I mean. You know, we see it in a negative. It's got negative baggage attached.
Yes.
You know, we don't see the wonder of it.
No, and girls are conditioned from very early on to that their worth revolves around if they are liked by boys,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so younger girls who kind of sort of love to be together and giggle together and play together and have slumber parties and, you know, I'm sure you did those things.
Innocent sort of things, yeah.
Yeah, and then as they grow older, this heavy conditioning about their worth comes in, you know, it's the unspoken, but it's also in the media everywhere, you know, that that their worth is if they are if they can be liked by a boy, which then teaches them that they must become an object, you know, so they're seriously objectified. And boys are subjected to pornography at such an early age, you know, that they start to see every female as an object. You know, it just They don't have the cognition.
Well, and I'm thinking too. You know, like you know, I don't know other examples, but like JonBenet Ramsey, these little girls that they, you know, dress them up, you know, in these beauty pageants and everything, and they look like they're 20 years old. Or And correct me if I'm wrong here, but I know it's one of these teeny bopper idols. It might be Hannah Montana. Didn't that young woman get pregnant at an early age? And I mean, I don't know. I just think it sets the wrong tone for young girls to see all of this. You know, I'm not a prude. You know, but I think I'm liberal, but even this all seems too taking it all too far.
Well, I agree. I'm not sure about the. I know of the name Hannah Montana. I don't know if she got pregnant or not. But even if she didn't, what you're describing though is something that happens. You know, and it's like robbing our girls of their potential and putting it into a world that does not nurture them. And so as they grow older, they just feel like they have to maintain this, like you were saying, you know.
Well, they not only are they not nurtured, but they're not valued either. They're
exactly.
a dime a dozen. You know, they're
right.
a dime a dozen. Well, you know, it makes me think about my mother used to say, you know, oh, what's that old expression? You know, why will he buy the cow if he gets the milk for free or something like that.
Right, something like that. Yeah, right, yeah.
But
yeah.
it goes back to, I mean, seeing, you know, young girls seeing their body as something sacred, something of value, not to just, you know, toss it aside or let it be abused or used, you know, callously, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Is that sort of what you mean with the socialization?
Well, yeah, and I think that girls just need to be taught. We need to teach our girls from early on about the sacredness of their moon flow and give them rites of passage ceremonies and rituals that honor them, that bring them into the circle of woman, you know, through their blood. Indigenous cultures do this, you know, and have done it for a very, very long time.
Well, and I can see, too, where if you're doing this for the young girls, the mother and her circle, she has to have a circle, or she at least has to be in her inner standing to be able to do that.
Exactly, and be able to. Now, with my girls, I taught them from an early age as best I could. I taught them, for instance, just about what goes on in culture, what goes on in society towards girls. Like if they wanted to see a movie or something as they got a little older that had a lot of sexism in it, you know, I would ask them to give me a report on it. How were the women treated? What did you see? How did you feel about that? You know, and we would have discussions about it, rather than just saying, no, you can't see that. I mean, I'm not into violence, and so we didn't do violent movies in the home, and violence just wasn't in our, kind of on our radar screen, really.
Mm-hmm.
But as they got older, they wanted to explore, and so then I would ask them what did you learn about how women were treated in that book or in that movie or in what that person said? So that they developed within themselves their own understanding from their own perspective based on their own feelings of their own witnessing, you know?
Well, I think that's really brilliant because how many mothers don't do that? And so then what does the girl walk away with? She walks away thinking what she just saw is the norm, is the way it's supposed to be.
Exactly. And a part of being an empowered parent, an empowered mother, is that you teach your children how to be empowered themselves. You don't do for them. You know, you teach them how to access that strong sense of self within themselves that they can draw on and feel and know that that's who they are. And you will create strong children who will challenge you as they age, you know. But that's good. I think it's very good because they have their own sense of self and what works for them with my girls, I feel, you know, a good baseline of feminist values. And, you know, they do their things and they live their lives and they make their decisions and all of that, you know, that's their life. And their fundamental foundation, though, is about feminist values.
They would not fall into the category we hear of so much that young women are resisting the idea of feminism. They realize that how important it still is.
Well, I think, you know, you would probably need to ask them, but from my perspective, they don't necessarily use the word feminism all the time because, you know, in many circles it scares people or it turns people off or people have a reaction to it, and they have been in the music industry with an all-women's music collective bringing Goddess to the stage, really, you might say, through their music. And so but they have encountered, you know, the reactivity to the word feminist. So they don't really say it so much, but they know what's in their heart about those values.
Right, right. So, you know, just another of the words we have to reclaim and try to cleanse it of the negative connotation was laid on it. How unfortunate.
It is,
So can you think of examples, you know, how you've either guided rather than controlled or you modeled being a powerful woman?
I think for me, I would say the big thing is that I worked hard on just having my own boundaries about what was okay with me and what wasn't. Even, for instance, with in family life, I also have helped raise a foster son and a stepson, and they were troubled young men. They were definitely very troubled when they came to me and throughout their lives, and so I just modeled behavior that said, no, this behavior, this treatment, this the way that you're talking to me is not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so they heard that a lot, and I've also really taught them, and we continue to have conversations about this, about the differences in communication between demanding, commanding, and asking, for instance, you know, or
mm-hmm.
Or sharing from a non-dominating kind of a way. So I would talk to them like, okay, this is how I feel. How do you feel about that? You know,
mm-hmm.
what can you share with me that's coming up for you? And I would use that kind of language with them.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one way.
And you felt that they appreciated that and didn't sort of run roughshod over you.
No, they felt it gave them space. You know,
mm-hmm.
that's, to me, that's the whole key in any kind of inner standing and then outer standing
right,
or understanding is the creating of space between people to where there's no hierarchy, there's no right or wrong. Yes, they had to have boundaries. Yes, you had curfew. Yes, you have to be home by this time. Yes, you don't steal, those kinds of things,
mm-hmm,
and, you know,
mm-hmm.
but I'm talking about where you get into power struggles about who's right and who's wrong.
Right,
I really tried to model for them that what was more important was to really listen and to really hear the other person without judgment. And so I would model that as best I could.
Now, you also said that you felt you contributed to their education by going into their schools.
Yes, uh-huh, I did. I have a slideshow that... It was actually a friend of mine, my neighbor actually, was one of the first editors for Maria Gimbutas's book, Language of the Goddess. So
mm-hmm.
she and I became good friends. And she had many slides from a collection working with Maria. So she gave me slides, and she and I went together on occasion into schools and showed these slides and educated you know, at assemblies and in classrooms about the early Paleolithic and Neolithic goddess-centered cultures.
So now this was in California.
Yes.
Okay, because I was thinking, did you get away with that in Tennessee?
No. No, we moved early on from Tennessee back to California, but you're right. This was in California, yep.
Okay. All right, and so, well, I would imagine you were a great mother to bring to show and tell then.
Well, you know, you probably have to ask them, but, you know, because I was sort of very different, you know, but I think that they definitely appreciated what I brought and what I talked about in school. It was no other mother was doing that. So
I bet. You were probably the cool mom.
I think I became that, yeah.
Well, now tell me what you wanted to say about you called it the sane Demeter and Persephone myth.
Oh, yes. Well, we're all very acquainted because it's taught, you know, in school from very
mm-hmm.
early on that, you know, the myth of Demeter and Persephone, which according to Charlene Sputnik, who wrote The Lost Goddesses of Early Greece, a wonderful book that I encourage mothers to go out and get and share with their daughters because there's wonderful rewrites of the myths that we've come to all know as sort of the Olympian myths, you know,
mm-hmm.
which are full of violence and war and rape. And
mm-hmm.
and that's a whole thing in and of itself is the rape mythology that patriarchy subscribes to.
Mm-hmm.
And we live in a rape culture. I mean, there's just, you can, the news about the young women and the girls being raped in Haiti
mm-hmm.
right
yeah.
now
yeah.
is horrendous. And do we hear anything about it on the news? No.
No, actually, that's one of the things I was going to talk about later on in the show.
Oh, uh-huh.
So
I'm
glad that you brought that up because, yeah, I mean, Haiti's just sort of dropped off the radar screen of the news media.
Yeah, and the rapes that are going on there are horrific. And at any rate, so back to this the Olympian mythology of Demeter and Persephone, it became known as the rape of Persephone. Why on earth would we teach that to
yeah.
our children?
Right.
Why? I mean, I would call that insane. And so that's why I mentioned to you about the sane mythology. And Charlene says, prior to the Olympian version of the myth, which was at a later date the Olympian versions were, there was no mention of rape in the ancient cult of Demeter
mm-hmm.
and her daughter, nor was there any rape in the two traditions antecedent to Demeter's mythology. So the sane mythology is really the story between mother and daughter where Persephone here as the daughter, Demeter's the mother, the grain mother, and which is, you know, metaphorical of life-giving, she who gives life, like the earth. She's synonymous in earlier mythologies with Gaia.
Mm-hmm.
And Persephone as her daughter, if she grows and she starts to hear a call and she starts to make her way out into the world and into the underworld or the lower world or the netherworld where the dead hang out. And she felt a call to go and midwife them.
Well, it's like she heard the call of her own life's journey. She was becoming
exactly.
an adult.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And in that story, she meets Hecate, who is the crone or the grandmother, and she goes to Hecate to learn more about the secrets of life and death.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she learns on her journey. And so she journeys into the world of death and comes to see that, oh, well, death isn't an end in itself. It's related to regeneration. And so when she comes back from her journey, she is reunited with her mother, and they are in relationship then as two mature women. One
right.
is an older and one is a younger, but they are mature women.
Right,
and they
right.
celebrate that. And it's just a lovely, lovely mythology.
Well,
know.
It goes back to what we said at the top of the hour. We have those myths have been taken away from us.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
well, and you know, and as long as we're on the subject, I'll just throw in a little tidbit here. In the cakes for the Queen of Heaven, you know, one of the affirmations that comes from that chapter where you teach the Demeter Persephone myth, they
mm-hmm.
talk about goddess affirms healthy relationships between mothers and daughters.
Yes.
Well, if you extrapolate that, we are all
yes.
mothers and daughters of one
yes.
kind or another.
Yes.
So
yes.
really, goddess is also affirming healthy relationships between women rather
yes.
than this competitive, toxic stuff that's set up in a dominator patriarchal society.
Exactly. And I think that, well, Charlene Spretnak talks about that too because she says that the sense of daughter came later. She says the early Greeks often conceived of their goddesses in maiden and mature form simultaneously.
Okay.
And later the maiden was called daughter. But I think that reiterates what you just said about the goddess affirms healthy relationships between women.
Well, in another way to look at this, I have just learned, I have to tell you recently, I have become friends with this scholar, David Hillman, who has actually been telling me so much about the ancient Greeks that we really aren't even taught because most people learn about the ancient Greeks through the translations that have been warped by a Christian lens,
right.
Sort of like this idea of the rape of Persephone.
Right.
And he even said Zeus has been demonized because really these, what they call rapes, weren't really even rapes. You know, he was saying, you know, Zeus is like this energy, and when it, when he commingles with another energy, you know, we're talking about natural forces, not men and literal personified men and women. You know, to the Greeks, they meant like, he was a force of nature. If he commingled with another force of nature, they created a third force of nature. It wasn't this idea of a domination of a male over a female.
Right.
It had nothing to do with that whatsoever.
And I think, it's just, we've got to really just completely dismantle this domination thing. You know, it's just, it really, I mean, it's causing our demise. And it is the demise of patriarchy. It's not sustainable.
Well, and you think about it, I didn't think about these things when I first learned about goddess spirituality. It was more about, well, what does it mean to me? But when you start to externalize things on the outside world, you start to see, well, if we see this stuff as the norm, then we are more, we will more readily accept either dominating someone or being dominated. It's like there's no other alternative.
Exactly. And I have what I call teaching circles with women, and you know, we learn about empowerment together, and you know, what does that mean for women? And one of the things that I really try and emphasize is communication. I mean, muni is Latin for gift, so communication means that we're sharing together our gifts. So how do we do that? And our language is so, the way we talk to each other is so dominating. And like I said earlier, I mean, I think this is why, you know, you start to see the emergence of things like nonviolent communication skill training, and because it dismantles that dominator consciousness just in how people talk to each other.
If I can be so bold here as to use a perfect example of dominator language is Fox News. I mean, look at the, you know, they give people a license to be so ugly and so divisive.
I mean,
just today there was an example on television of these teabagger types who were mocking this paraplegic who was sitting on the sidewalk. You know, it was so ugly. It was just unbelievable to me. And I think when we see out there in the world, when we get the message from, you know, media outlets or movie stars or people in the public eye that it's okay to do this sort of thing, then some people who have a proclivity toward that don't restrain themselves.
Well, it's true, and I think that, you know, this is, I mean, there's just a lot of work to do, and I do feel that women, teaching our girls, about who they really are and how to teaching them how to stay in their power, because, you know, that becomes really quite a challenge as they get older and they're out in the world. I know my daughters have been up against it in the music industry, very male-dominated, and just they've had a difficult time, and they're powerful young women, you know. So I just think that helping our daughters maintain, you know, their strength from, for instance, that Demeter and Persephone myth, that maintaining their strength as a powerful woman is essential, not only to them, but for the planet. I really feel that women becoming empowered is the answer. And you said that the Dalai Lama had said that Western women, it's in the hands of Western women. And, you know, it really is, because we're probably the least oppressed, you know, in the world. And although, you know, I think that America has its own kind of oppression for women. I mean, it's just in... not getting stoned for being accused of being an adulteress at 13.
Right,
you know?
Yeah, compared to some other parts of the world. Yeah, we're
right.
much
right.
more liberated, even though we have our
yeah.
own issues here.
Yes. So
well, we probably have a – I'm sorry, go ahead. I didn't
– I hope I've answered some of your questions about the role modeling and how to be a powerful – how I've been a powerful woman to them. You know, they'd probably be able to tell you more.
Well, you know, you've done a really good job. And, you know, for the time we have, you know, allotted,
okay.
I think you've been great. And I do hope you write that book.
I'm planning on it.
And I encourage listeners to go to your website. You have two. You have, again, the one we mentioned earlier, midwifingdeath.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's midwifingdeath.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you also
mm-hmm.
have the one with your name, LeslineDelaMadre.com.
Mm-hmm. It's the same website. It's just two different URLs. But there's for people who are really interested in midwifing death, that's just a good way for them to get right to the website. But the website also has a lot more on it. There's quite a few articles there on different subjects.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
Now we in the closing minutes here, you have a retreat for women coming up soon.
Yes, I do. May 7th through May 9th in Occidental, California. And that is called The Ecstatic Feminine. And so it goes from Friday through Sunday.
And is there information on the website about that as
yes,
well?
Yes, there is.
Uh-huh.
Yes,
wonderful.
There is. Yep.
Well, Leslie, you have been a pleasure. Thank you for returning to the show.
Thank you.
I look forward to maybe seeing you next time I'm up in Northern California.
That would be nice. Now, did you say were we going to have call-ins? Do we have time for that?
Well, at this point, no one actually called in.
Okay.
What happened? Well, you know, it's 6 o'clock here. This is when everyone's coming home from work and doing dinner.
Yes.
Actually, most of the time, people listen from the archives.
Uh-huh.
But we do have guests. You know, we do have call-ins sometimes, but we didn't get one tonight.
Okay,
but,
I wasn't sure how that worked. So thank you for telling me about that.
Oh, no problem, no problem. And it's been a pleasure. Thank you so very much. And
before
I leave you, is there? I know you've shared a lot of important, mother. Wisdom. Is there anything you wanted to say that I've maybe didn't think to ask you?
Well, I'm not thinking of anything at the moment. I think you covered it pretty well in this time that we've had. I just encourage people to contact me if they have comments or want to know more or anything like that or want to maybe have a discussion or. Any questions they have about raising their daughters.
And did you want to mention your show?
Thank you. Yes, I do have another website that I didn't say before because it's something entirely different than Midwifing Death. I have a TV show called Wildfire, Television, TELL-A-Vision, for women. And so we feature women on that show. It's all about women, women's writing, women in art, women in music, women in everything.
Okay.
We do interviews. We talk about their works. The website for that is wildfireforwomen.com.
Well, it sounds like you're the perfect hostess for that show, Leslie.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so very – wait. You know what? We do have a caller. Let you go, let's see who this is and if they want to talk to you. Just 1 minute.
Okay.
Hi, this is Karen. Did you call in to speak to our guest tonight, Leslie?
Well, yes. This is her daughter.
Well, and which daughter is this?
Oh, it's actually both of us, but this is Serena right now speaking, and this is Larissa DeCuni.
Oh, well,
hi.
Wonderful.
Hi.
Did your mother do a great job tonight?
Yes. Fascinating. Could definitely go for hours.
Well, I think we actually could have too. So would you agree with everything your mom said, was there anything you wanted to add from the daughter perspective?
Oh, well, I mean, there's so many different veins of what you covered. I feel like it was quite a broad spectrum in a short amount of time, for sure. And I felt resonant with everything that you spoke of, for sure. I think there's definitely things that we would add just from a perspective of a different generation, you know. Mm-hmm. But kind of hard to narrow it down, like remembering everything that you said, what I would want to speak into.
Well, you know what? Let me make an offer to you. If you ladies want to get together and come back on the show sometime and talk about Goddess from a young woman's point of view, you know, how the things that we talked about, how we agree and how you see things differently, I think it would make interesting talk for our listeners, and you're welcome to.
Thank you so much. That's a great invitation. We'll take you up on that.
Okay. Well, thank you. Did you want to say anything to your daughters, Leslie, other than how proud you must be of them?
I love them. And I just, if they have any, a couple words for all the young women out there that would be coming from you, if you have anything, just a few words for young women.
Yeah, for sure. One thing that I felt inspired to share was the topic of feminism and feminist ideals. And coming from our generation, what we really like to say when we're interviewed or when we're talking about feminism is what we like to say is that we don't put that word on, we don't say we are feminists, we say we are feminine.
Okay.
And we are feminine. And we are coming from the ideals of feminism. And it's really just walking the path of women's empowerment and reclaiming women's truth and women's culture. And to us, it doesn't have to be named like, oh, you're a feminist because of that. It's like a returning to our femininity and reclaiming that women's wisdom. And so within that, we feel like the stigmatism around all of that, it can be, you know, dissolved because it's our right, you know, to be feminine and to reclaim our own empowerment and our own voices. And and just to all the young women, just having the courage to reclaim sisterhood and also to heal the ties with our mothers and with our sisters.
Mm-hmm. Well, Leslie, you've done a good job.
thank you, Karen. And we invite mothers and daughters to come to our retreat because my daughters will be there too. It's all ages.
Okay, wonderful.
Okay.
Well, thank you, all three ladies. And,
thank you.
And girls, ladies, you're welcome to come back on the show. And, you know, get yourself a show topic together, and your mom will tell you how we do it. And I'd love to have you on as a guest.
Fabulous.
Okay. Thank you so much. And can I say one more thing before
we
go?
Sure, go right ahead. Sure.
Okay, so on that same topic as far as us doing a show and how my mother was referring to our work in the music world and on that path and in terms of speaking to young women, that's actually one of the most powerful things for us about making music is that it's a massive way to communicate with the world. And a big part of that world is young women and that then grow up to become mothers. And so because of how inundated the mainstream musical world is with propaganda and cultural conditioning that is unhealthy for young women, it's ultimately so important for there to be an alternative to that. And not even actually calling it an alternative because it is a creation in and of itself that's not just like something that challenges the norm, but it is creative, so it's not in opposition to, it just lives, you know? Mm-hmm. And so offering music that young women can listen to that gives them something other than the mainstream messages that they're so bombarded with. And we have a song on our album that's called Think Twice, and that is really one, I mean, our whole album for young women, but that song we
wrote. How would listeners find your music, ladies?
Oh, it's on CD Baby. Our CD's on there, and then also on our website, which is goddessalchemyproject.com. And you can buy our CD on our website and also on CD Baby, and we are on iTunes as well, where you can buy our whole CD or individual songs.
Well, you know, if you'd like me to play some of your music on the show, I would be happy to add you to the list of artists and, give you a little exposure now and again. So you let mm-hmm. we can talk about that. You let me know.
Yeah, that would be fabulous. Thank you.
Okay. Well, ladies, okay. It has been a pleasure. Thanks to all three of you. And I look forward to when we do this again.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much, Karen. Thank you, girls.
Good night. Okay. Good night.
Bye. Bye.
So if you're just tuning in, this is Karen Tate, hostess of Voices of the Sacred Feminine, where we discuss goddess, the divine feminine, and the resurging interest in right brain thinking and the feminine consciousness, whether the great she be deity, archetype, or ideal, and how these new values and benchmarks just will save the world. And our guest tonight was Leslene Della Madre discussing raising daughters in patriarchy, and those wonderful young women you heard toward the end of the show were her daughters, and I hope we get them back on the show. So, it's about that time. We're crossing the threshold into the bottom of the hour, and I'm going to take a very brief one-minute music break to get ready for the What's the Buzz segment. And for that 1 minute, I'm going to leave you listening to Jenna Green and her and this music selection of hers is called Bard Song. So I'll be right back. I hope you'll stay with me. I'll be back in like 60 seconds, so stay tuned in.
We honor now the Celtic Bard. We offer up our praise. Guardians of our mysteries, keepers of the old ways.
Did you hear that, listeners? Do you recognize that sound? Well, it's time for What's the Buzz? And at the top of this segment, I'm going to share with you this late-breaking edition that one of the listeners sent me at the last minute. Thanks goes out to Silky Rose for sending this. It comes from an Examiner.com column, the Domestic Witchery Examiner, Chris Bradley, and she just reported today that the New Jersey Board of Education voted this morning on adding Wiccan and pagan holidays to state school calendars. I bet that's a big surprise to a lot of people. I know it is to me. Just real briefly, I'll mention a few of the high points. Let's see. The New Jersey Board of Education will vote to approve their list of religious holidays permitting pupil absence from school for the 2010-2011 school year. Included for the first time on this list are the 8 pagan or Wiccan holidays or Sabbaths. If approved, this will mark the first time any state approved pagan holidays to a state calendar, and it will set a precedent for other districts and states across the country. So we will keep you apprised. Hopefully, you know, it will be approved. And if you'd like more information on that, you can go to examiner.com and put in the examiner's name, Chris Bradley. Chris Bradley, and I'm sure this article will come up, New Jersey Board of Education. You know, I'll give you an update on the next show if there's an answer for you. Well, I also want you to know about this article in Archaeology magazine about the dynasty of priestesses that's been uncovered on the island of Crete in Greece. If you go to archaeology.org online, you can go to their recent issue, and you'll see it there, and I'll just tell you a little bit about it. There are some nice pictures. For a quarter century, Greek excavation director Nicholas Stampolitis and his team have been unearthing untold stories of people buried 2,800 years ago on the necropolis of Orthi Petra at Eleutherna on Crete. Until now, the site has perhaps been best known for the tomb its excavators dubbed A1K1, an assemblage of 141 cremated individuals, all but two of whom were aristocratic men who likely fell in battle on foreign lands. Excavated between 1992 and 96, this elaborate rock-cut tomb was brimming with fantastic burial goods that date from the 9th to the 7th century BC, including bronze vessels, gold and silver jewelry, and military regalia, as literally befits the burial of Homeric war heroes. But now, two unprecedented discoveries since 2007, three lavish jar burials that contain the remains of a dozen related female individuals and a monumental funerary building where high priestesses and her proteges, also all related, were laid to rest. This is adding to the knowledge of Eleutherna's women and forcing the scholarly community to reevaluate their importance and role in the so-called Dark Ages of Greece. This is a pretty long article, and it talks about how the site is right near Mount Ida, and the priestesses were buried. They think they served the probably the god Zeus. And let's see, what else shall I tell you about this? You can actually see a slideshow that shows you the artifacts. And one of the peripheral articles talks about making a matriline. An archaeologist and expert in physical forensic anthropology and paleopathology has worked at the site for two decades, and they talk about the newly discovered matriline of women spanning the millennia throughout the Eastern Mediterranean. And you can click on that there as well. So go take a look at that if this is your kind of thing, because this will certainly be a sacred site of goddess, I would imagine, on our itineraries in the future. So that's at archaeology.org, and you want to look up the online feature, Dynasty of Priestesses. So I hope you'll enjoy that. It's a great article. Now, for something upbeat, I wanted to share with you what makes the healthiest and happiest societies. No, it's not wealth. Brooke Jarvis in Yes magazine reports that inequality has little impact on the lives of those who find themselves at the top of the pile, right? Well, no, not exactly, says British epidemiologist Richard Wilkinson. For decades, epidemiologist Wilkerson has studied why some societies are healthier than others. He found that what the healthiest societies have in common is not that they have more income, more education, more wealth, but that what they have is more equitably shared. In fact, it turns out that not only disease, but a whole host of social problems ranging from mental illness to drug use are worse in unequal societies. In his latest book, The Spirit Level, Why More Equal Societies Almost Always Do Better, Wilkinson details the pernicious effects of inequality and what that does to societies. It erodes trust, it increases anxiety and illness, it encourages excessive consumption. Does that sound familiar? Excessive consumption. The good news is that increased equality has the opposite effect. Statistics show that communities without large gaps between rich and poor are more resilient, and their members live longer and happier lives. It's a really good article. You can read more if you like. I'll tell you where to find that article. It's on Alternet, so go to www.alternet.org. And each article seems to be coded with a number. This number is 145955, 145955, and it's by Brooke Jarvis, What Makes the Healthiest and Happiest Societies? Hint, it is not wealth. So it's pretty extensive. It has lots of interesting stuff. I'll just read one other interesting little piece I highlighted here. Amongst monkeys, inequality takes the form of dominance hierarchies based on power and coercion and privileged access to resources. In other words, it's this mentality. I get it first because I'm stronger and I don't care if you're hungry. And human hierarchies are similar. It's why power, status, and wealth all go together at the top, and why powerlessness, hunger, and poverty go together at the bottom. But the article talks about how human beings have the opposite potential. We can be the best source of love and learning and cooperation and assistance of every kind. This really sort of ties into last week's article about the survival of the kindest. So that's alternet.org. I'm wondering if you've heard about this other story. This was also on Alternet. Bill Berkowitz interviewed Rachel Tabachnik about these prayer warriors, and Sarah Palin are organizing spiritual warfare to take over America. Really interesting. The opening of the article says, imagine a religious movement that makes geographic maps of where demons reside and claims among its adherents the Republican Party's most recent vice presidential nominee, Sarah Palin, and whose leaders have presided over prayer sessions, one aimed at putting the kibosh on health care reform, with a host of leading GOP figures. Its movement, whose followers played a significant role in the battle over Proposition 8, California's anti-same-sex marriage initiative, and Uganda's infamous proposed anti-homosexuality law, more commonly associated with that Catholic Christian group, the Family, a religious network of elites drawn from the ranks of business and government throughout the world. But the movement we're imagining encompasses the humble and the elite alike, supporting a network of prayer warriors in all 50 states within the ranks of the U.S. military and at the four reaches of the globe, all guided by an entire genre of books, texts, videos, and other media. Imagine what I've just described, and you've just dreamed up what's called the New Apostolic Reformation, the largest religious movement you've ever heard of. They call themselves the NAR. And according to Rachel Tabachnik, God at that time, Tabachnik, they demonstrate the taking control of communities and nations through a large network of prayer warriors whose spiritual warfare is used to expel and destroy the demons that cause societal ills. Once the territorial demons, witches, and generational curses are removed, the born-again Christians in the videos take control of society. The movement's notion of spiritual warfare has spread from the California suburbs to an East Coast inner city and has impacted policy decisions in the developing world. They're talking about Uganda and that law where gay people can actually be killed and their family and friends put in jail for not turning them in. This is just insanity. The movement operatives are well connected enough to have testified before Congress and to have received millions of dollars in government abstinence-only sex education grants, and bizarre enough to maintain that in its prototype communities, the movement has healed AIDS, purified polluted streams, and they've even grown huge vegetables. Leaders in the NAR movement refer to themselves as apostles. Well, They go on to say presidential campaign watchers got their first test of the new apostate reformation when it was revealed that Sarah Palin, while mayor of Wasilla, had been prayed over and a laying on of hands by Reverend Thomas Muthi of Kenya, director of the NAR East Africa Spiritual Warfare Network, and a ceremony designed to protect Palin from witches and demons. Muthi, it turns out, is famous in his native land for driving out of town a woman he deemed a witch, a charge that her neighbors they called for her stoning after he deemed her a witch. Palin, according to Alaskan Apostle Mary Glazier, became part of her prayer network at the age of 24, and Wasilla's no stranger to wandering NAR leaders. Last June, Apostle Lance Walno stopped through the course of his world travels promoting the movement's Reclaiming the Seven Mountains of Culture campaign at Wasilla, Alaska Assembly of God Church, the very church where Muthi laid his hands on Palin. And these seven mountains are the realms of business, government, media, arts and entertainment, education, and the family and religion. So they want to reclaim all these genres. Again, I'll repeat them: business, government, media, arts and entertainment, education, the family and religion. Other NAR luminaries dropping by Wasilla last year, including leading international apostles Naomi Dowdy and Dutch Sheets. This is another long article. I want to refer listeners to the website. It's alternet.org, and the number on the article is 145-796. That's 145-796. And just a couple more quick things before we move on. It says the movement has emerged from the largest single block of Protestant Christianity on the globe, sometimes called charismatic, neo-charismatic, or neo-Pentecostal, one often overlooked since its adherents don't compromise a single denomination and often belong to churches characterized as non-denominational. Other things they talk about in the article, Bill Berkowitz talks about how most people are unaware of this new apostolic reformation, and Rachel Tabachnik says what we should know about these people. They talk about how the movement's structured and why it's grown so rapidly. What is spiritual mapping and spiritual warfare, and how do they function? How are these strategies put into practice? Where have they been tried successfully? Where have they failed? Are the politicians involved with NAR? Well, we know they are. And where does Sarah Palin fit into all of this? And finally, why should the American people be concerned about the new apostolic reformation? Obviously, this is way too much for me to go into on the show, but I would encourage you to go to alternet.org and look for this article number 145-796. It's called Heads Up, Prayer Warriors and Sarah Palin Are Organizing Spiritual Warfare to Take Over America, and it's by Bill Berkowitz, posted March 1st, printed March 15th. Let's see, and you've probably heard about the latest sex scandals rocking the Vatican. Well, last week we all talked about the male prostitution ring that came to light at the Vatican, and I mentioned that on the show. And this week in the news, we learned while the Pope was, a bishop or some high-ranking official in the church in Germany, he became aware of a pedophile priest and just relocated him. Well, this interesting article from Times, it seems Cardinal Schönborn has been rather brave and has come out publicly and said celibacy is partly to blame for clerical sexual abuse. He's a senior cardinal, and he's called for priestly celibacy to be reexamined in light of the sex scandal sweeping the Roman Catholic Church. He's a conservative archbishop in Vienna and a protege of the Pope, and he shocked the Vatican by suggesting that it should carry out a, quote, unflinching examination, unquote, of the causes of the scandal. He actually shocked the Vatican, saying they should take a look at their mess. These included, he thought they should look at how priests are trained. He wrote in his Archdiocese magazine the question of priest celibacy and the question of personality development, and he said it would take a lot of honesty on both the part of the church and society as a whole to look at these things of personality and celibacy and the priest training. Well, he must have gotten into a lot of trouble because the Vatican said the remarks he made were misinterpreted. The Vatican said priestly celibacy is a gift of the Holy Spirit. And another cardinal came out and said that was his reply. Sorry, that priestly celibacy is a gift of the Holy Spirit. So there's nothing wrong with celibacy. Then this Cardinal Schoenberg, who came out saying we should look at celibacy, began to backpedal. He issued a clarification letter claiming that that he wasn't in any way seeking to question the Catholic Church's celibacy rule. It's just a mess. Obviously, a lot of finger pointing. The cardinal, they say he's a respected conservative theologian, and he has a history of sparking controversy. He isn't in what they call an ordinary or bishop to Austria's Eastern Rite Catholics, whose priests are actually allowed to marry, just as priests in the new Anglican ordinariates being set up around the world for ex-Anglican clergy will be allowed to marry. And last year in Rome, this cardinal, Sean Byrne, who's always been close to the Pope, presented a petition signed by leading Austrian lay Catholics calling for the abolition of the requirement for priestly celibacy. So he said it's important for someone in Rome to know what our lay people are thinking about the problems that are rocking the church. So obviously this won't be solved quickly, but we want to keep on top of it, and we'll see if, the church does look at celibacy and their priestly training and, their personality assessments and development of who is in the priesthood. Well, just a couple more things. One last thing, we touched on it briefly when I was talking to Leslie. Haiti has sort of moved off the radar screen of the news media, and people there are still struggling. And in a previous show, we touched on what's being attempted to help women stay safe, but things seem to be moving at a snail's pace, certainly not quick enough, and the Associated Press had some articles that came out about the tragedy of women and girls being raped in Haiti. So my only point in bringing this up is these people are still in dire straits. Hurricane season is on the way. It's going to be a long time before there's any normalcy in their lives. Even though it's not in the news media, please send them positive energy. Remember them in your prayers. Donate to reliable charities if you can. And if you're interested in women's rights over there, maybe donate to a charity who is particularly trying to target helping women and girls stay safe in these camps that are set up because there's no housing. All right. Well, that concludes our What's the Buzz segment for tonight. And as long as you keep telling me you like the segment, and as long as there are important things to talk about, I'll do my best to try to be a voice for what we understand are ideals of the great she or the sacred feminine or goddess. You know, we have to do our best to teach and share ideas that offset all the negativity and the toxic attitudes out there that breed intolerance and hate, war, exclusivity, disharmony, injustice, imbalance. And as the Dalai Lama said, it's Western women who will change the world. That means you and me and our like-minded brothers, and we will. We'll do it with our thoughts, our words, and our deeds. Can I say, as we will it, so shall it be? So with that being said, the bees, are released from my bonnet for yet another week. Well, now on to some of our final announcements here. I want to remind you that on the March 27th, We have in West Hollywood, Lydia Rule is coming to town, and she has her Remembering Herstory, the Personal is Political, the Political is Personal presentation. For more information about attending that one-day event in West Hollywood at 2 o'clock, please email hollywoodnow@hotmail.com. Or go to hollywood-now.org. That's hollywood-now.org. Suggested donation at the door is $10. If you have any problem at all finding information about that, don't hesitate to contact me. Then coming up April 3rd, we have the third convocation of Queen of Your Realm with Ava at the Goddess Temple down in Orange County. The topics of this Queen's convocation is going to be love, family, men, and our magical and sacred animals. From 6:30 to 10 at the Goddess Temple on Saturday, April 3rd, it's $65, but it includes champagne dinner. And some lovely things to take home, like printed notes and a folder, keepsake gold writing pen. They always have a memorable ritual. But more important, really important information to share as women try to reclaim their queen and empower themselves. As Ava says, when the goddess got thrown out of religion, the queen got thrown out of women, and it's time, time to set her free. So convene as a queen at the Queen's Convocation on April 3rd. For more information on that, go to goddesstempleoforangecounty.com, goddesstempleoforangecounty.com. The Cakes for the Queen of Heaven series is on hiatus. The next class will actually resume on May 8th. We'll be starting session two then. The series is divided into two, and for April we're taking a break to sort of restore and rethink and reclaim all we've learned in the first session. And when we come back, the next six classes are called sort of an umbrella description on the threshold. It's going to be about discovering female imagery and presence ignored in Judaism and Christianity. We're going to look at the painful suppression of female experience in Western religious tradition, relating our personal discoveries and experiences to our individual identities, and most important, exploring new world views and theologies for the future. It's a wonderful class put together by the Unitarian Universalist Women, and it is my honor to be teaching it. I will be repeating it on the west side in Southern California. By west side, I mean like the Venice-Santa Monica area starting in September. So if you are a listener and you're in Southern California and for some reason you couldn't make the currently running series or going down to Orange County was too far to go, if you're closer to Venice Beach, that's where the next series will be held starting in September. So let me hear from you if you're interested. Let me tell you what the upcoming guests for the show are going to be. Next week, here on Voices of the Sacred Feminine, please tune in next Wednesday because we have Joan Norton, author of Mary Magdalene Within and co-author with Margaret Starbird of 14 Steps to Awaken the Sacred Feminine. She's going to be on the show, and we're going to be discussing the essence of Mary Magdalene. And we've also invited to share the time with us Katrina Fretwell. She's a wonderful poet. Her poetry is very intense and sweeping, and she has some lovely poems dedicated to Mary Magdalene, the Sacred Bride, and she's going to share that with listeners. Then coming up the last Wednesday of March, we have two guests. That night at the top of the hour will be Julie Raymond. She's the author of We the Trees. It's a book of goddess fiction about ancient priestesses in ancient Turkey. We're going to discuss how our ancestral memory helps us in creative ways as we rethink, reclaim, and remember past lives, courageous women in ancient times. Then at the bottom of the hour, David Hillman, PhD and author, will discuss with me. We're going to play Siskel and Ebert, and we're going to talk about the new movie, Clash of the Titans. And if you've been tuning in regularly, you know, he and I intermittently have been talking about comparing the mythology we've learned about ancient Greece through a Christian/Western lens versus what the original Greek texts actually say and mean. And I sort of touched on that a little bit when I was describing what David has taught me the early Greeks actually meant when they talked about Zeus. And it doesn't seem he was quite the rapist and philanderer that, that sometimes he's made out to be. It doesn't seem that's really what the Greek intention was, but that was how the Christian interpretation came out. And that's just one example how things get distorted when they're being translated. Very interesting stuff. Then in April, I'll just briefly mention a few other people. Eleanor Gadden, certainly foremother and wayshower. She is going to be on the show. She is the author of The Once and Future Goddess. I'm sure many of you recognize her name. Then on Earth Day, we're going to have Burl Hall. We're going to be talking about Earth Day subjects, including deep ecology and deep feminine spirituality, including femininity in relationship to cosmological processes of the inner world of human beings and nature. David Hillman comes back at the very end of the month to finish our discussion of how Christianity has really warped what we think we know about ancient Greece and ancient priestesses and actually the power of ancient priestesses. Max Dashow of the Suppressed Histories Archives will be with us in April, as will Esther Luttrell. We're taking sort of a change of pace with Esther. She's a screenwriter who's penned the book Dear Dean, Love Mom. This is a delightful book. I really enjoyed and invited her to be on the show. While it's not directly related to the sacred feminine, I thought her message was important because she discusses her experiences discovering life on the other side after her son died. So she will start off the month of May. Well, I won't go any further than that. I think that's enough for now. And if you don't know me yet, I am an open book, and I hope you will get to know me better. My website is KarenTate.com. Please go there, learn about my books, my examiner column, the classes I teach. It will also take you to my YouTube channel and clips that I have of the Isis Temple of Thanksgiving and Sekhmet's Mountain Sanctuary. There's also a 6-part clip you can listen to. It was a talk I gave at an expo about the sacred feminine for a sustainable future. And I don't know if you know it yet, if you're new to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, but there are 2 years of archived radio shows on my personal website. Yep, they're right there and downloadable and free. And I thank those of you who have written me so often calling it a treasure, because when you tell me that, it's like gas in my tank. It keeps me going. So keep your feedback coming in. But go to the website when you can and take advantage of those archives. Most people really do enjoy them. Let's see. My last examiner column kicked up quite a stir. I don't know if you noticed. I had Dr. David Hillman guest write for the column, and his article, Thank Christianity for Feminism, really got some dialogue going, really touched a nerve. So if you were one of the people who read the column and commented, I do thank you. And for understanding, I really do want to provide a platform for the exchange of ideas and theories. We don't all have to agree on everything or see everything eye to eye, but we all remember that we do have a place under that great big umbrella of the great she. So please check out my articles at The Examiner. It's kind of like my blog. I'm one of only a few goddess advocates in the United States writing for The Examiner, and you can find them by going to theexaminer.com on the internet, put my name in the search box. Articles by me or about me will pop up, or you can find a link to The Examiner column from the homepage of my website, KarenTate.com. I often talk about the politics of spirituality, everything from healthcare to sexism, and the inhumanity of political platforms that put profits before people. Let's see, what else do I want to share with you today? I think that's probably about it. You know about my books, I think. I have both of my books available for listeners at a special price of $25 plus shipping and handling. That's Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, and Walking an Ancient Path, Rebirthing Goddess on Planet Earth. The latter book was a finalist in the USA National Best Books of 2008 Awards, and some of your listeners have been writing in from all over the country, actually telling me you're using that book as a study guide. And again, gas in my tank, the needle's moving off of empty, it's getting to full. So thank you so very much. Well, the show is about to come to an end for another week, and I'd like to leave you with some inspiration until we meet again next Wednesday. So let me share with you something I shared with the Goddess Temple in Orange County. They were having a special event, and they asked me to send some words of wisdom for the young priestesses, a sort of inspiration or a prayer. And so this is what I wrote to them, and I will share it with you because I believe it from the bottom of my heart and with every passionate fiber of my being. Gaias, have no doubt, make no mistake. We are the women being called upon to save the world. Yes, even the Dalai Lama recognizes that and has said so. You and your sisters are being asked to step up like so many foremothers and wayshowers at crucial times at the crossroads of history. So utilize the energy of Sekhmet, Kali Ma, Lady Libertas, Bridget, and the Morrigan. Let their fire burn within you to transform yourself and your world. Find within you your spiritual warrior and lend your vital energy toward the shift that's coming to rebirth the great She into our world. You are not alone. This effort is happening far beyond this room today. You are part of a movement. You are awakening the world to a planetary shift of profound proportions for people everywhere. And momentum is building. Awareness is raising. Social justice is on the lips of people across the globe as they are filled with the tenacity to save the world. Now, it may not look like it some days, but that's how a paradigm shift manifests. Slowly, slowly at first, building momentum, churning, churning, raising awareness, raising consciousness, ebbing and flowing, but it's happening, have no doubt. You may be that 100th monkey. Your energy might be the one to tip that morphic field and birth that paradigm shift to create the meaningful change to steer humankind and Mother Earth from catastrophe. Being here today is one step. Now make a commitment to take the next. You are her voice. Let the world see and hear you loud and clear. Well, good night, listeners. I hope you'll be back with us next Wednesday. And that's all I have for you for tonight. I hope you've enjoyed the show. And I'm going to leave you with Dance With Me by Jenna Green. So please, dance with the goddess. May she of 10,000 names embrace you in her golden wings. Good night. Until next week.
You'd had enough, but worry on your face I could tell. You'd had to drink and to stop you from thinking about your day of living hell. Well, the best that's to play in the business.